Courage and Duty. Written by Distracted Daydreamer. Read by Devil with a Bird Dress. Summary. A Moonlit Conversation. Katara always thought she'd sleep easy when they made it to the Northern Water Tribe. She would be back among her people. Or, rather, her people's cousins, who she had always secretly thought boasted a wealth of power and knowledge they would be eager to bestow upon their distant family members from the South Pole. Her gran-gran had been remarkably close-lipped, but she had still told her stories of the beauty and power of the waterbenders, the sheer number of people crammed into a glittering marvel of architecture partially maintained by waterbenders who specialized in construction. The impenetrable walls of the city that took a band of waterbenders working together to open, unlike their village, where they rebuilt the walls by hand every few months to keep their stores of food safe from wild predators. That had been one of the thoughts that had amazed her. So many people like her that they could have specialties in various trades. It was like the stories, but it also wasn't. Her gran-gran had never told her that only male waterbenders were allowed to learn how to fight. She didn't want to be ungrateful, even though she felt like her anger could boil a hole through the smoothly paved ice roads to the gently lapping waters of the canal. Or was it her humiliation? Maybe she was being unreasonable, but she had always dreamed that when she made it to the Northern Water Tribe, they would have been impressed at what she was able to do without lessons and let her into secrets that would help her restore some of what the Southern Water Tribe had lost over the years. She ought to be happy that she could at least learn healing. She ought to be. She ought to be. It was so much more than what she could get in the Southern Tribe, but no matter how many times she told herself that, she couldn't hold back the way bitterness welled up within her. It stung her pride how she was so easily dismissed, but she knew she wasn't as important as the Avatar. Sokka pretended to be a prince, but he had no shame in front of beautiful girls. Compared to what the Northern Water Tribe had, the Southern Water Tribe wouldn't seem like they had anything to offer. If she had been born here, if she had been this chieftain's daughter, maybe she could have felt as regal, as poised. But then again, she still would have been a girl. And she wouldn't have been able to learn to fight. At least that horrible, arrogant waterbending master was teaching Aang. She'd ask him about it and pretend she wasn't horribly jealous. Later tonight. For now, she was going to prowl the beautiful empty streets, listen to the calming lap of water against the canal bends, and sulk like a storm cloud. Her wandering took her to tall ice spires and sculptures, artistically arranged around a pebbled, winding path. Wind set chimes tinkling in a calming harmony. Her footsteps automatically slowed, and she took deep breaths, trying to soak in the calm alone. That was the plan, until she rounded a corner and startled on seeing the profile of a slim girl, dressed in rich furs and gleaming white hair the color of fresh-fallen snow. Yue. The chieftain's daughter, Yue, who she had been busy envying for no good reason. She must have made some sound, as the girl's head darted up to look at her, and a practiced smile fell easily over her petal-pink lips. "Hello there. Katara, wasn't it? How are you enjoying the Northern Water Tribe so far?" Katara blinked. "It's very lovely, Princess Yue. Thank you for asking," she responded on autopilot, trying to recover from her surprise, the princess's sudden appearance. She stared, trying to collect herself, straightening self-consciously as she admired the princess's poise. After her brisk walk, she felt like her curly hair was tugging itself out of her braids, and she fought the urge to raise a hand and check. Did Yue feel as uncomfortable with the sudden company as she did? Her voice didn't show it, but why was she sitting alone, flushed in the chilly night air, her eyes red-rimmed and... oh. Katara had been wandering for a while, and her footsteps weren't particularly soft. The explanation struck her like lightning. Yue had been listening to her footsteps, and she had been crying, but was now pretending that she hadn't been, because her sanctuary had been intruded upon by the bumbling peasant. "Is there anything the Northern Water Tribe can help you with?" Yue asked politely, her smile growing more strained. Her eyes darted away, and then back again, a break in her usual poise. Katara realized that she had been just standing and looking at Yue, and blushed. She wanted to run away, but if it had been her... "There isn't anything the Northern Water Tribe can help me with now, but is there something that I can help Yue with?" She took a deep breath in to steel her courage and continued. "Pardon me if I am mistaken, but you've been crying. My father, the chieftain, always used to say that there isn't a problem that doesn't feel better after sharing it with someone." Yue startles into a laugh. "It's beautiful, a little melodic sounding, like a songbird." "Your father must be an unusual chieftain. I don't think my father would agree with you. He always says that the most important virtue is duty, and the second most important is not complaining about it. I do my best, but sometimes I'm too weak." Katara dared to move a little closer, and Yue shifted a bit to the side of the bench so that she faced Katara more directly. Katara sat and turned so that her knee almost touched the other girl's, saying, "I don't think it's weak to cry." "Maybe," Yue shrugged, and suddenly the girl looked so human. "If I was stronger, I wouldn't have lost control, I think. I'm not usually like this. I worry. I might have offended your brother, and if I have, I offer my apologies again and hope you might convey them." It was Katara's turn to laugh. "Sokka? He could take offense to anything, but he doesn't mean it. And I would have thought he'd have offended you instead. He's really good at saying whatever pops into his mind, even when it doesn't make any sense." "No, that's something I admire about him. It's just... I don't know. I was reminded of my duty, and though it seemed so easy to be friends before, it felt like I was doing something forced or wrong or..." Yue's eyes swum with tears, and she seemed to straighten a bit more and force them back with effort. Maybe you'll understand if I just show you." She reached into the collar of her furs and pulled out a pendant almost the size of her small fist, crowned with a gold clasp fastening it to a dark blue ribbon. Katara's hand reached automatically for her own necklace, and then she made the connection. Yue was betrothed. "You're younger than me, and you have one too. How did you come to terms with it? I knew my duty. I know my duty, but..." Yue fell silent, looking down at her feet. "You just turned 16. You weren't planning this, were you?" Yue nodded. "Your father chose him for you?" Yue nodded again. "That's horrible," Katara exclaimed. The words hung in the air, too loud. Listening to their echo, she realized that she had insulted Yue's culture and sense of duty, and then the next words came tumbling out. "I don't mean that your father is horrible, really, but I don't think it's right that they didn't even consult you. I can't imagine how that feels for you, Yue." "So you got to choose, Katara? Tell me about it, please." "My necklace wasn't given to me by a betrothed, the way that you do it in the Northern Water Tribe. It was from my mother, who got it from Gran-Gran, who got it from someone here. I don't know the whole story, but I think she must have run away from here to come to the Southern Water Tribe. She married someone else from the Southern Water Tribe and passed down the necklace to her son to give to my mother. I've worn it ever since my mother passed, to remember her." Katara hesitated, her voice growing stronger as she came to her conclusion. "I suppose Gran-Gran did choose. She chose not to participate in any society that didn't let her have that choice." Yue's voice, when she spoke again, was soft and bitter. "If only I were that brave." Katara couldn't say what instinct led her to take one of Yue's hands in hers and to use her other to tilt Yue's face to meet her eyes. Her skin was soft beneath her fingertips, and warm, I don't think people are born brave, Yue. Gran-Gran missed home so much she never spoke about why she left. I think people just decide what they can't live without doing, and then they have to do that and deal with the consequences. Katara, I think you need to think about what you find most important, not what your father thinks is most important. It's your life. What would you choose? Katara suddenly realized that she was touching a princess's face and dropped her hand nervously, babbling, I meant no disrespect, Princess Yue. I think running our mouths runs in our family. Yue caught Katara's hand, smiling gently. It's okay, Katara. I think I needed some honesty. Thank you. And you can just call me Yue without the title. She grinned mischievously. After all, you already have a few times, so let's not stand on ceremony anymore. Your brother claimed he was some kind of prince, so surely, Princess Katara, we can agree to dispense with titles. Katara smiled, relaxing at Yue's quip. She stuck her nose up in the air and said, in a pompous voice, Well, I could only bear to discard the oh-so-important courtesies among the most important of personages, that being, of course, those who consider themselves pursuing the most noble of callings, friendhood. And what are the duties of those who pursue this noble calling of friendhood? I am afraid I may lack the experience required, but shall make up for it with eagerness aplenty. No experience needed, only the willingness to share sorrows and joys, to have them and double them respectively, and here Katara's tone dropped back into sincere earnestness. I promise that I'll do the same with you. Yue smiled. That sounds nice, really nice, Katara. I think so too, Yue. They smiled at each other. After a bit, Yue smoothed her skirt out and rose gracefully, offering to link arms with Katara. Would you like me to walk you back to where you stay? I know the city can be a bit of a maze, and we've wandered a bit far. Or were you walking somewhere in particular before you stumbled across me? Distantly, Katara realized that her anger had receded, and a wave of renewed determination had flowed into her. She wouldn't let herself be held back to only a fraction of the waterbending art. She didn't know how she would do it yet, but waterbending wasn't something she was okay to live without. But for now, she found that she didn't want to think about it. She wanted to learn more about the beautiful princess's heart behind her perfectly polite facade. If you're in no rush, maybe we can take the scenic route back? I'd like to get to know my new friend a little better. And Yue's lips curled into a crescent, as bright as the moon on a clear night. End. Thank you for listening. Author notes. I had a lot of fun thinking about this pairing and rushing the hastiest ever canon review so that this conversation could fit exactly after Yue runs away from Sokka on the bridge. Knowing that they celebrate Yue's birthday the day Katara arrives, with Katara being turned away the following morning, with Yue and Sokka's conversation the same evening Katara gets Aang to teach her how to fight, there's a very, very narrow window in which they could have spoken. I tried to explore how Katara's boldness and moral compass can prove so comforting to Yue, who has been so lonely. I hope it comes through. Podficker note. Happy voice team, Daydreamer. I hope you enjoyed.